Blog Talk Radio.
Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is May 26, 2023, the start of Memorial Day weekend, and I thank you so much for joining me. I hope all is well in your world, and that this will be a great weekend for you to get together with friends, family, neighbors. But also, let's not lose sight of what Memorial Day weekend or Memorial Day commemorates. It's the incredible sacrifices of the men and women of our armed forces going back to the founding of our great nation. They paid the price, many of them the ultimate price. And then you look around and say, well, what were they fighting for? What did they die for? Why did they suffer? When we seem so willing, so eager to give up the freedoms that they fought so desperately to preserve. Ben Franklin, one of the founding fathers, a very sage man, when asked what he and the founding fathers had given us, was to say, well, we've given you a republic if you can keep it. He also observed that those willing to trade freedom for security will probably have neither. How much security do we have in a country where hundreds of thousands of innocent people are losing their lives to both drugs and crime? Rampant crime, drugs pouring across the border. The lunacy of all of this is that if a country cannot take care of the safety of its citizens, what's the purpose to its government at all? It's not about going to the moon, although I'm a big fan of the astronauts, had the privilege of meeting several of America's astronauts, great honor. It's not about anything if it can't take care of its own citizens and keep them safe. That's why we have something known as the Defense Department. Many other countries refer to their military as their departments of self-defense, to defend their people, to preserve their lives, to preserve their ways of life. Our government is failing abysmally. We're losing more people on the streets of towns and cities across America than we've lost in combat in many major battles. And this is happening because we have open borders, and it's not just the southern border, and we're going to get into that momentarily, but we have narcotics, dangerous illegal narcotics flowing freely into our country. We have lunatic politicians who are seeking to decriminalize drugs, encourage drug use. For what purpose? Children are supposed to be sacrosanct. That's why when you go to the movies, they have ratings, PG, R, X, whatever, because children are to be shielded from certain materials. We recognize the fact that children are vulnerable. And now we have locations around the country, politicians advocating for sex change, surgery, chemicals, whatever, to alter the genders of children. Children. In some cases, without even acknowledging what's happening to the child's parents. It's a degenerate mentality. I'm sorry. If I've offended you, that makes me happy. Maybe it's time to stop worrying about offending people because I'm offended, and I'm sure you're offended. So why we're running around saying, well, we don't want to offend anybody. Mr. Cutler, don't people say that you're a xenophobe if you don't want open borders? No, I'm not a xenophobe. I'm a realist. I spent 30 years enforcing immigration laws, administering immigration laws, and I came to the realization that our immigration laws, our borders, are a follow-on to the work that the men and women of the armed forces do. The common shared mission of all of our branches of the military is to keep the enemies of America as far from our shores as possible. It's a very simple concept. Keep the enemy away. Whether it's Russian bombers trying to intrude into our airspace, whatever it is, the goal of the military is to intercept those who would violate our airspace, violate our borders, come to our country and kill Americans. That's the purpose for our military. It serves no other primary purpose. Up close and in person, guess who gets the baton? It's the Coast Guard, it's the Border Patrol, and it's the men and women of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And yet when President Trump wanted to build a border wall, the Republicans would not fund it. So please don't tell me it's one party or the other. Both parties suck. Both parties are in bed with those people who bribe them, because that is what political campaign contributions are. They are smoking bribes, period, full stop. I'm not talking about the average Joe or Mary who contributes 50 or 100 bucks to someone's campaign. That's fine. That's what it's supposed to be about, although I wish there was no money in politics at all, really and truly. But when you have corporations and special interest groups and unions, you name the organizations that could pour tons of money into political campaigns, you have an unhealthy situation. This is an employer-employee relationship, and the people writing the checks are the employers. Guess who the employees are? The politicians and the parties who accept the money. George Washington warned us about political parties, and I think it's always worthwhile thinking about what George Washington had to say about parties when he delivered his farewell address on September the 17th, 1796. It was a Saturday, and it was in Lower Manhattan, not far from where I live. George Washington's brilliant words. However, political parties may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely, in the course of time and things, to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. Is that not what we're seeing? Politicians are playing a con game on us. Listen to the people that want to be president. They will all stand there and pound the podium. I'm talking now about the Republicans, not the idiotic Democrats. And full disclosure, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. Problem is, the Democrats are no longer Democrats. I can't think of the last time I voted for a Democrat. But understand that the Republicans would not fund the border wall that President Trump wanted to erect. And why not? The border wall was not designed to block off the United States from Mexico. That was a Pelosi BS line. Oh, it's a wall of hate. Really? So when people are expected to attend a football game or a baseball game, when they are expected to go through a gate and not climb over the fence and traipse across the playing field, that's anti-fan? It's xenophobia? Bull. It's about an orderly process so that you know who you're letting in, keeping out the bad guys. Go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. You don't have to write it down. Go to my articles at Front Page Magazine. I include the link to that section of law in many of my articles. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. It makes it clear. This has absolutely less than nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. Everything about protecting public health, public safety, national security, and God forbid, the jobs and wages of Americans. The Democrat Party used to be, or at least used to claim to be, the party of the average working American, which is why I became a Democrat, and the people that I knew here in Brooklyn, my parents, were all Democrats. The Republicans tended to represent the needs and concerns of business owners, and the Democrats, the blue-collar folks, the workers. My dad was a construction worker. I consider what construction workers do to be heroic. It's more dangerous than law enforcement. And without the trades, without the tradesmen and tradeswomen, there would be no roads, there would be no houses, there would be no cars, there would be no trucks, there'd be no technology. We'd be living under trees and in caves. We'd go back to Neanderthal lifestyle. Okay? That's how essential blue collar is. The work Americans won't do. Don't you love those lawyers? Boy, oh boy. Shakespeare was right. The lawyers who say what, right? Oh, we're talking about the work Americans won't do. Really? The work Americans won't do? Now, look, there's some good lawyers out there. I've connected with a few, worked with them. I worked with some good prosecutors. But by their very nature, lawyers are I hate to say it, bottom feeders. They go after the victim of the car accident, or they look to create a situation where they can make tons of money. And that's what immigration has become for the lawyers. It's become an immigration delivery system. I was just listening to a program where they were talking about Bob Goodlatte and an immigration bill that he had proposed. I had a private meeting with Bob Goodlatte nearly a decade ago. At the time, he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And when I asked him why he would push for more H-1B visas, and they told him how my late first wife, who was a brilliant programmer, died decades ago to cancer, horror story, reminding all of us of how fragile and temporary life is, which is why we should be compassionate and considerate to one another. Life isn't an easy proposition. I still have nightmares about being in the waiting room at Memorial Hospital. I lost my parents to cancer when I was a kid also. It puts things in perspective. We got to chain every idiot who puts money above all else in the waiting room of those hospitals where the loved ones are waiting for word about the outcome of surgery or the biopsies of their family members. And all of them will tell you the same thing. Last week, we had no idea this was going to happen. It came out of nowhere. Everything was perfect last week. 2 days ago, things changed and changed irrevocably. And we all hang by that same thread. My mother used to say to me, we all hang by very slender threads, and it doesn't take much for that thread to break. We need to get our act together and our priorities straight. And I look at the damage being done because people want to make more money. You know, I understand the guy that robs the local convenience store. I'm not approving of it. Please don't for a heartbeat misunderstand what I'm saying. But it kind of makes sense. The guy is desperate. He's stealing a loaf of bread, a container of milk, and we always hear the stories about some law enforcement officer, some police officer, whatever, who sees that and buys the guy groceries because this guy's desperate. But some of the biggest crimes being perpetrated against Americans and America are the mega wealthy, people who are worth billions. They have mansions scattered around the world. They fly airliners while they scream about the environment, by the way. Think about that hypocrisy, that lunacy, right? You can't eat more than one meal at a time or live in more than one house at a time or put on one suit more than one suit or one dress at a time. But to get more money and more powers, they'll do anything and everything, and they have absolutely no morality and no concern about the damage being done to everybody or even the damage that they will be inflicting on their children and their grandchildren and descendants for decades to come or generations to come. This is pathological stuff. I compare them to a cancer. Cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients and secretes hormones so that the body will develop a network of blood vessels that surround the tumor so that the tumor can bathe in nutrients. But ultimately, by bathing in nutrients, the cancer starves off healthy tissue. The victim dies and the tumor dies with it, but cancer has no brain. These idiots have no heart because they have an insatiable appetite for wealth, and it's never enough, and they always need more, and they don't care about the damage they're doing to their fellow Americans or to their country, and they're putting America on the precipice for no damn reason. For no damn reason. And we're all here for a temporary visit. What will their legacy be? I'm still trying to understand the pathology of the brains that supposedly live between their ears because it makes no sense. Most people are happy to have a roof over their head, a refrigerator stocked with food, perhaps a car in the driveway with a tank of gas, and the ability to send their children to get a good education, increasingly difficult in this screwed up country, and maybe go on vacation. That's what the average American wants. That's what the average person wants. And we are suffering mightily because there are people who are literally hell-bent on acquiring power and wealth beyond anyone's wildest dreams. And so we hear this nonsense. We're going to secure the southern border. Why are we limiting it to the southern border? Let me ask you a question. I like to break things down to a scale that most people can relate to. God forbid, supposing your house had been burglarized or your neighbor's house was burglarized and you think, gee whiz, I don't feel safe. And you're probably living in one of America's major cities run by the lunatic left. So of course you don't feel safe. The criminals feel safe. Average people, no, they're the ones who are at risk, right? So you call up a company and you say to them, I want you to harden my house against a burglary. I want you to do whatever you can to make it as difficult or impossible as you can to keep burglars and home invaders from gaining access to my house. Now imagine the guy walks around the house with you and he takes photographs and he's got a clipboard and he's scribbling and he's writing and he's scribbling and he's making noises and he's looking around. And finally he comes to you and he says, you know what? No problem. I'm going to secure that bedroom window in the master bedroom. No one's going to get through that window. You're going to protect my house? Yes, sir. We're going to take care of that bedroom window. Well, wait a moment. I have three kids. They each have a room. Each of their rooms has a window. We have a living room. There's a big window next to the living room. There's a window in front of the sink in the kitchen. We have a skylight. And all you're offering to do is to secure the bedroom window where my wife and I sleep. What about the other windows? What about the doors? What about the skylight? Sir, I am telling you, stop confusing me with other issues. We're going to secure that bedroom window. What more could you possibly want? Well, what about the... No. We're going to secure your bedroom window. Now, I just want to ask you a simple question. Would you hire this con artist? I mean, is it only the bedroom window that might possibly provide access to that burglar that wants to break in? Couldn't they break into your daughter's room or your two boys' room or the window in the kitchen? Of course they could. So why in the world is he only willing to do what? Protect against burglars breaking in through your bedroom window? Is that reasonable? Is it rational? Does it make any sense? Now, I want you to listen to every politician who stands there and every so-called journalist, we've got to secure the southern border. When you hear it from now on, I want you to equate it with, we're going to secure your bedroom window. It's no different. It really is no different. It's exactly the same. They want you to focus on one vulnerability and ignore 35 other vulnerabilities. Never mind that the guy can get in through your garage. Never mind that you've got other windows. Never mind you've got three other doors and a big wide sliding patio door. No, he's going to protect what? Your bedroom window, just like the politicians are going to secure the southern border. Same thing. We will only address one issue out of 30 issues, and you should be happy and vote for me because I'm your hero. How stupid is this? How dumb and ignorant do they must think we, the people, are? Why wouldn't you secure the other windows? Why wouldn't you make them as difficult to get through as the bedroom window? Unless maybe he has a friend who's a burglar who wants to break into your house the next time you go away. What else could you imagine? Why wouldn't the Republicans fund the border wall? All it was designed to do was make certain that all commerce and all people have to go through a port of entry, just like all of the fans that go to a baseball game are supposed to go through a gate. But the Republicans said, no. No border wall. Then we were told we're going to put technology on the border. Technology is helpful, but only if you have enough Border Patrol agents who can respond in a timely fashion to the alerts when they go off. I remember during the time when Lou Dobbs was on CNN, I was a frequent flyer on that show. Very often I was on the program more than once a week. And almost every day his producers and reporters would call me up for advice even when I wasn't on the show. And if you remember how Lou Dobbs would speak, it was an interesting style of speech. I remember sitting on the set with him. I think Bill Tucker perhaps or someone else was seated next to me. And Lou said to me, Mike Cutler, what do you think of SBINet, the Secure Border Initiative, also known as the Virtual Fence? And, you know, humor sometimes helps to make the point. And I remember looking over at Lou and I said, Lou, the virtual fence will do exactly what it's supposed to do. He looked at me, he said, really, Mike? I said, absolutely. It will stop virtually nobody. The point to the virtual fence was to pour tons of money into a contractor that was probably, I don't know for sure, but I'm going to guess, take a wild hunch, making major campaign contributions. So the money goes round and round and round. Just like I was watching Newsmax. By the way, I'm going to be on Newsmax tomorrow, Saturday, at about 2 o'clock East Coast time in the afternoon. And unlike some of the other networks, they reached out to me earlier this week, said, what do you want to talk about? I said, I want to talk about everything and anything except the southern border. The southern border is a tremendous risk. I don't want to minimize it. We know that Hezbollah is working with the human traffickers and the drug smugglers to flood agents into the United States. We know that China is working with the cartels to flood fentanyl into the United States. Sleeper agents are entering the United States. weapons are moving across the border. We know how dangerous all this is. But it's only a 2,000-mile stretch of border when America has over 100,000 miles of border. Again, think about the bedroom window that the security company is willing to protect, right? We'll take care of that bedroom window. Don't you worry. Forget all the other windows. Forget the doors. Forget the skylight. We're going to take care of that bedroom window for you. Boy, I feel safe now, right? So understand what we're really talking about. So you've got all this stuff going on across America. And what Newsmax said is, are you willing to come on the show? And if so, what do you want to talk about? I told them, and this morning we confirmed, and we will be talking about the other threats that the Immigration Service, the other vulnerabilities that exist because of the Biden administration and longstanding issues. This crisis has been a long time in the making. The way that George W. Bush created DHS violated the Homeland Security Act. Immigration was never supposed to be split between ICE and CBP, Customs and Border Protection and Interior Enforcement. They were never supposed to fold other agencies in. It was supposed to be a standalone agency and fix what was broken with the old INS. In fact, I was working unofficially with members of Congress, including the House Judiciary Committee and Jim Sensenbrenner, John Hostetler, Lamar Smith, and a bunch of other members of Congress to try to fix the system, especially after 9/11. That's why I did all those hearings. It was obvious that there was more to the immigration system that needed to be done. But what Bush did made things worse, not better, and he called it the Department of Homeland Security. I came to call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. Of course, now with Mayorkas, we should be calling it the Department of Hospitality Services, right? The Border Patrol is now providing concierge service. And to that point, Newsmax just did a story. I was watching them today. Great show up that was on. And they were talking about how Customs and Border Protection was asked point blank, are you paying for the illegal aliens coming into America to travel around the country? And the Border Patrol immediately responded and said, absolutely not. We're not giving them any money whatsoever. Wow, that's pretty cool. Except Newsmax saw through their nonsense, as I do, I'm sure you do, because they then ran a tape of Mayorkas at a congressional hearing, I think it was a Senate hearing, thanking them for providing DHS with $800 million to do what? To be spent on NGOs, who in turn were providing transportation and housing to the illegal aliens. As an immigration agent, as a law enforcement officer, we have a term for this kind of nonsense. Putting money into someone else's pocket so that they could then spend the money so that you're taken out of the equation is called money laundering. That's what it's called. If you or I did it, they'd come knocking on your door and put you in jail. It's called money laundering. Yeah. DHS didn't do it. Oh, no, don't look at us. We didn't do it. We just gave it to the NGOs, and God only knows what they did with the money, right? $800,000. There was a story about how an NGO was given a $530 million contract. They never had one before to house the illegal aliens. And they did a bit of digging over at the Office of Inspector General, Internal Affairs, and to their credit, Judicial Watch. And it turned out that one of the key executives for the company that got the money had just left working for the Biden administration on the transition team over at DHS. He moves over. And his outfit gets a $530 million contract, no competition, no competitive bid. And then it was discovered that $17 million was paid to this outfit for beds that were never used for illegal aliens. This is a money-making operation. And Americans are losing their lives. Our country is losing its sovereignty. And national security is going down the toilet. If you listen carefully, you can hear the constant sound that a toilet makes when it flushes. But it gets worse. Because one of the key issues is immigration fraud. I will tell you one thing, and no one talks about this. This is an absolute. I will guarantee you it is 100% impossible to secure the borders without, not more border patrol agents. That's ridiculous. We can always use them, don't get me wrong, but without meaningful interior enforcement. Without meaningful interior enforcement, there is no way on God's green earth you can secure the borders. I'm going to tell you why. It's very simple. And that's why when I hear this lie being foisted on us by just about every politician who aspires to win an election, we're going to secure the southern border. And you hear the little voice going, we're going to protect your bedroom window. I want you to make that comparison every time you hear it. It's like hypnosis. When you hear southern border, think bedroom window. We're going to secure your bedroom window, and you're supposed to be happy. Same difference. Number one, half the illegal aliens prior to Biden tearing down our borders, nearly half came not through borders, conventional land borders, but through international airports and disappeared into the night. It's always been a system designed to fail. How do I know? Well, unlike most talking heads on TV that run their mouths and they have no knowledge about anything they're talking about, I was, for the first 4 years of my career with the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, an immigration inspector assigned to Kennedy International Airport in New York City. So I'll give you a little bit of an insider's view of what that job was like. By the way, for those of you who think civil servants have it easy, for a year at the airport as an inspector, I don't know what the conditions are now, but when I was there, we got a 20-minute lunch break. And that meant that if you went to the cafeteria upstairs at one of the restaurants, all you had was 20 minutes. So you ran like crazy, hoped that the line wasn't too long, grabbed the sandwich, inhaled it, ran down the stairs, and ran back to your booth in under 20 minutes. And we actually had some bosses who were absolute sociopaths who would time you. I mean, I remember occasions coming back to my booth and my supervisor walking over to me with a face that was befitting a pallbearer, saying to me, "Mr. Cutler, 21 minutes, 8 seconds, what are you doing?" "Well, can you charge that to my annual leave? I'm sorry, I was off by a minute and 8 seconds." Most bosses weren't like that, but we had a couple of these nitwits that you give people a little bit of power, God help you. "No, you were a minute and 8 seconds late, don't let it happen again." Okay. Now you're sitting in a booth and you're being watched. You were expected to process a passenger every minute. So someone comes into your booth, what's the purpose for your visit, why are you here, how long are you going to stay, how much money do you have, and then you had to make a decision within a minute as to whether or not to admit the person. If you sent too many people to secondary where they could then search them, maybe pull up their suitcase or maybe go through their pockets, if you sent too many to secondary, you would get chewed out. "Mr. Cutler, how many people did you send to secondary off that flight?" "5 people." "Why?" I don't believe the guy is planning to go home. I think he's coming here to work." That was the big concern back in the 70s when I was an inspector. Not terrorism, people coming. And although we did find terror suspects and fugitives and so forth, but the biggest concern was that they'd come and work illegally. And my boss would say to me, "Yeah, but you can't keep sending people to secondary. It's going to take hours to clear it up because other people are sending people to secondary. Knock it off." "Well, why do we have secondary? The serious problems." "Well, okay, what's the serious problem?" "Listen, here's what you do. The next time some guy comes in and you have doubts, limit him to 2 weeks in the United States." Now, think of the insanity. Limit him to 2 weeks? I'd look down, the guy's wearing running shoes, and I'd say, 2 weeks, he wants 2 minutes on the other side of the doors. You're never going to see him again. That is why nearly half of all illegal aliens didn't run the border but came through international airports. You have a minute to process the guy. Send too many people to secondary, it's going to be reflected negatively on your evaluation. This is Lucy at the Bonbon Factory, but on steroids with national security implications. That's what it's like to be an inspector. Did it for 4 years. For one of the 4 years, I did the marriage interviews to see if people should get green cards based on being married to an American citizen. And we can go on for hours about that assignment, although we had a fabulous boss back then, a guy by the name of Dick Guthrie, who was one of the best supervisors I ever had. But this was a numbers game. This was about creating the illusion for the American people that we've got this. We have your back. We're going to protect you. And if you believe that story, have I got a bridge or maybe a border wall to sell you? So these people would disappear into the night. And it was funny. If you walked out into the lobby, maybe to grab lunch or at the end of your shift or the beginning of your shift, there were certain flights from certain countries that were prone to having the most problem cases. And some guy or some gal would get through customs and they'd walk into the lobby and a cheer would go up. It sounded like being at the baseball park and someone just hit a home run. Another one escaped the evil clutches of immigration. It was almost a joke. It was almost a joke. So that's how you wind up with lots of illegal aliens, and that's how you convince people from around the world that we really are not serious about our borders or our laws. Because as I pointed out in one of my earliest congressional hearings, you get one opportunity for a first impression. And for most people from around the world who seek to come to the United States, the first set of laws that they encounter are immigration laws. So from day one, we have convinced the world that we are a pushover. This is a joke, and the joke is on us. Of course, 9/11 was supposed to change all that. So right after the 93 World Trade Center attack, this is before 9/11, I did my first hearing, 97, May 20th, 1997. The issue was immigration fraud and visa fraud based on what? Based on the fact that the attack at the CIA in January 93 was carried out by a Pakistani by the name of Kansi, who shot up the CIA, fled the country, was brought back, put on trial, found guilty, executed, but it didn't bring back the dead. And 1 month later, the first bombing at the Trade Center, which killed six, injured over 1,000 people, inflicted $500 million in damages, almost brought the tower down sideways. And every alien involved in that attack, and it was only aliens, by the way, had committed some form of immigration fraud, lying about their identity, having multiple passports. The list goes on and on. It turned out that around 96, 97, the Clinton administration implemented a program called Citizenship USA. You can look it up, CUSA. The goal was to naturalize as many new citizens as possible. Doris Meisner, the commissioner at the time, thought that her job was to naturalize the world. I am convinced that if she could have waved a magic wand and declared anybody born on planet Earth to be a U.S. citizen, she would have been in ecstasy. So they pushed through 1.1 million applications for U.S. citizenship, even brought in brand new workers to do it. Up until then, anybody who applied for citizenship had to undergo a good moral character investigation. It's in the law. What does that mean? It means that if you applied for citizenship, an agent was supposed to go out, knock on your neighbor's door, show them a photograph, and say to them, do you know Charlie Smith? He's a citizen of Great Britain. He'd like to become a United States citizen. What do you know about him? And if the neighbors all agreed that this guy was a good guy and he had no criminal history, of course, you would naturalize him. But if the neighbor said, gee whiz, you know, he's not a bad guy, but he gets paid every other Friday. And every time he does that, he goes to the bar. He's notorious. He hangs out with the hookers. If his wife complains, he beats the snot out of her. But she doesn't want to go to the police. She's afraid of him. He's abusive. It's terrible. And a couple of times, he beat the kid so bad that the kid wound up in the ER. Really? Yeah, and then he's done some other things. And you take that all down, and you talk to 5, 6, 8, 10 other neighbors, and they all say, yeah, the guy's a good guy until he gets his paycheck, and then he goes on a rampage and put his child in the emergency room. Guess what? Even if there were no convictions, that guy does not get naturalized. Why? He certainly lacks good moral character. Along come the Clintons, and they say, oh, we can't be bothered with that. So all they did was run fingerprints and a name through a database, and if it's okay, it's okay. And suddenly, turned out that the application process, which normally generates certain number of suspected fraud cases, were turning up zero cases. One of my close friends was the head of investigations at a major office. And he called me up, he said, and I forget what the numbers were, it doesn't matter, I'll give you an example. But he said, you know, my office usually gets, let's say, 200 suspected fraud investigations every month because people believe that there's something wrong with the application. Now that they've implemented CUSA, I'm getting zero referrals. Well, at the time, I was working with the Congress unofficially. I called them up, told them about it. They arranged for him to testify before the Oversight Committee. And during the hearing, he referred to the Citizenship USA program from the Clinton administration as being the, quote, Jiffy Lube process. Well, the knives, as you might imagine, came out. He claimed that he had zero referrals. They found one referral. He was accused of lying to Congress. They tried to fire him. I called up Lamar Smith, who was at the time chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee, and I said to Lamar, we put him into this situation. Now we've got to do something about it. He said, not a problem. So he was able to stay on the payroll as an agent. They yanked him out of management. They had him traveling around the country doing investigations to see if everything was okay, but they really didn't want to hear from him. They just did this because the Oversight Committee was threatening the agency with adverse actions, and so they said, okay, this guy, who, by the way, got the Hammer Award from Al Gore just a couple of years earlier, and I warned him, I said, be careful with that damn hammer. Pretty soon they're going to smack you upside the head with it. I guess I wasn't wrong. He was able to stay on the payroll, keep his pension, retired happily, which makes me very happy because this was outrageous. So So this is a long time coming. And by the way, lots of employees at Immigration back then complained to the Office of Inspector General that they were being forced to process applications before fingerprints came back. You get good moral character investigations. And there was plenty of evidence of malfeasance, but supposedly the Inspector General said they couldn't prove that there was a nexus between this and any political considerations. Sure thing. This is where we are. The most precious thing that a country can bestow upon someone from another country is citizenship. Citizenship. In fact, when bin Laden was taken down by our special forces in his library, they found a copy of the 9/11 Commission report and a copy of a citizenship certificate, I'm sorry, a U.S. citizenship application. We know that terrorists have come to the United States, acquired U.S. citizenship as an embedding tactic. The 9/11 Commission warned about that. Now, nobody wants to talk about it, but so today we're going to talk about it. Because here is a very interesting, as they say, because there was a case where, bear with me one moment, let me open this up. One second, please. Forgive me. This is my fault. I should have prepared better. So the Justice Department issued a press release, and here is the press release. You're going to love it. New Jersey man sentenced to 12 years in prison for receiving military-style training from Hezbollah, marriage fraud, and making false statements. Well, the New Jersey man, an individual by the name of, and again, multiple names. We see this all over the place, right? Multiple names, and we're giving out driver's licenses to people who are undocumented in violation of the 9/11 Commission recommendations. Brilliant. But it starts out saying this. The Justice Department today announced that Alexei Saab, a.k.a. Ali Hassan Saab, a.k.a. Alex Saab, a.k.a. Rashid, 46 years old, was sentenced to 12 years in prison, followed by 3 years of supervised release for receiving military-type training from Hezbollah, marriage fraud, and making false statements. The guy entered the United States apparently on a visa. They didn't deal too much with that in the press release, but he had a Lebanese passport, was admitted to the United States, ultimately in 2006 became a United States citizen under the watchful eye of the George W. Bush administration, and the guy was in the United States scoping out targets to be attacked by Hezbollah, which is exactly what I've been saying. In fact, I wrote an article for a now-defunct publication known as The Social Contract. The title of my article was Immigration Fraud, The Lies That Kill. The terrorists all lied about their identities, their backgrounds, their affiliation with terrorist groups, their citizenship, and so forth. And that enabled them to stay in the country and embed themselves. This guy was working as an IT professional, a computer programmer, I believe it was, in New Jersey. Was living here for the last 20 years and was a sleeper agent. In fact, part of the indictment states that at one point he went overseas and tried to kill an individual who's believed to be an Israeli spy by working for Israel, except fortunately for that person, his gun jammed and the gun didn't fire. This guy is a serious threat to national security. He did not run our borders. He came in through a port of entry legally. Legally. And we know that Alejandro Mayorkas has announced that under him, the Department of Homeland Security will not pursue investigations into immigration fraud, even though immigration fraud was identified by the 9/11 Commission as the key method of entry and embedding for the terrorists. I just want you to think about that. In fact, I know I've read this before, but it's worth repeating. This is from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This was the report that was written by the agents and attorneys who worked for the 9/11 or worked with the 9/11 Commission. This is the first paragraph of the preface of that report. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they're unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. You got to really wonder what nimrods they're hiring, right? You can't figure this out? So no agency thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. It takes my breath away. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy, we believe, for reasons we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Stop. Hold the phone. They didn't say running the border, although that's a concern, okay? What did they say? Even though these terrorists demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa. And what are we being told? We're going to secure the southern border. We're going to take care of that bedroom window of yours. Why is no one talking about visa fraud or immigration fraud? In fact, let's go a step further. All we keep hearing from journalists and the politicians on both sides of the aisle, Swalwell was out there the other day, the Republicans don't want to solve the problem. We can solve the problem tomorrow. Yeah, how? Comprehensive immigration reform, which I came to call the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Why? Because you will not have the ability to interview anybody. You will not be able to do investigations. You're dealing with tens of millions of people, tens of millions of – think what that means. We're going to naturalize New York City four times over, maybe 25 million, maybe 30 million. Oh, and by the way, nobody talks about it. It's a dirty little secret you don't have. In fact, I spoke to several producers at another conservative program, not Newsmax. And I said, you realize that if you naturalize or legalize 25 million, you could wind up with 100 million kids if each one applies for four kids on average. Because as soon as you give someone lawful status, they have an absolute bulletproof, ironclad right to bring in their minor children and their spouses, which, by the way, I agree with. If you're going to live permanently in the United States, you should be with your family, right? But we're talking now numbers that we can't begin to comprehend. Imagine if 100 million kids came to the United States in a two-year period. They all immediately have to go to school. You got to build schools, hire teachers. The Congressional Budget Office made the point that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate kids who can't speak, read, or write English. No one's talking about that. The Republicans won't solve the problem, won't work with it. We have a problem solver. We're going to just legalize the people. Bob Goodlatte wanted to have an amnesty program. Of course he did. When I met with Bob Goodlatte, he told me that he wanted all those people to work here from India. And I said, what are the American programs? Chopped liver. And I thought of my late first wife and all of her friends that we used to hang out with. These are brilliant Americans. Most graduated with honors. They have advanced degrees, some more than just MBAs. Some had PhDs. And Goodlatte said to me, well, my son knows something about computers. And he'd like nothing better than to bring in thousands and thousands of brilliant Indians. Brilliant Indians. He actually had a woman whose ancestry is from India. Apparently, he should have registered maybe as a foreign agent of the Indian government. So I looked up his son. I knew nothing about his son, but he ran his mouth, you know, typical politician. Look up Bobby Goodlatte. Don't take my word for it. Everything I tell you is verifiable. Good old Bobby got his start with Zuckerberg at Facebook. His son, who wants thousands of brilliant Indians. How about encouraging Americans to become programmers so they can rise out of poverty and become part of a vibrant, upwardly mobile middle class that used to be the hallmark of America? The American dream was linked to the middle class that they want to destroy, both parties. Right? They want to turn the middle class into the dodo bird. Let's make it extinct. The corporations can make more money. Here we go again, that feeding frenzy. Outrageous stuff. Outrageous stuff. So you're being told now that we should be processing tens of millions of applications, even though we know that immigration fraud was the key method of entry and embedding for the terrorists. Right? That's kind of like saying that the solution to cancer is to kill the patient. Death cures cancer. If you have a problem with what's happening on the southern border, all you need to do is legalize everybody who's here illegally. By the way, that would include the hundreds of thousands of getaways who escaped detection. They're here. They'll apply, and they'll probably get citizenship. And if they're terrorists like this guy, how many terrorists do we need to blow us up? What did 19 do to us on 9/11? Think about that. Death cures cancer. Amnesty solves illegal immigration. Right. They won't be illegal anymore. We'll make them legal. We won't know who the hell they are. We won't know if they're terrorists, but they won't be here illegally, so that's cool. I once said you could have zero crime in America if you declared all the criminal statutes to be null and void. That way, nothing anybody does is considered a crime, and we have zero crime, and you'll need a shotgun to go out to buy a container of milk. We're almost there. We are actually almost there. Maybe I shouldn't have read it. Maybe some of these Nimrods thought it was an inspiration for what they're doing now. Crime-free society. Everything and anything goes. Unless you're a law-abiding citizen and want to buy a firearm to protect yourself, we're going to come for you. But if you're a criminal, and if you're a criminal alien in particular, we'll kick open the doors for you. And then I'm listening to this nonsense from Jeffries over in the House, the minority leader, saying, oh, the Democrats want to preserve the safety net programs when they're doing the negotiation to the deficit, and the Republicans want to end these programs. How much money is being spent, do you think, on the 5 million illegal aliens that were admitted by the Biden? And I think the numbers are even higher. Because, again, it's not just the southern border. So you have millions and millions of people. We're spending money on them every day to provide them with housing, food, medical care, transportation, the deficit through the stratosphere. And when you make the statements about comprehensive reform, in essence, what you're doing is firing the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world. Because they hear that and they say, well, these crooks and these idiots running that government, if I could only get to America, I can get citizenship, and then I could bring my 12 kids and my wife to the United States. How wonderful would that be? We've seen this before. It was the Reagan amnesty on small scale. It was supposed to involve 1 million. It wound up involving 3.5 million, but nobody talks about all the family members who were then admitted to the United States, starting with the children, and then ultimately when they became citizens, involving their brothers and sisters and their families and their spouses and kids and on and on. So maybe the Reagan amnesty ultimately brought in 20 million. 20 million. Now we could be looking at 100 million. Meanwhile, we have deficits up the kazoo. We have a serious water shortage. Kansas is now in a drought situation where it's going to impact our crops. Biden wants to change the way the water is being used from the Colorado River because we know that there is a drought. And I've made this point before. I'm going to make it again. Everybody here needs 100 gallons of water on average per day for sanitary purposes, for cooking, for drinking, and so forth. That doesn't even include the water needs for irrigation. So a while back, I wrote an article, and I want to run this idea by you. And I don't know if you're old enough to remember the story of the snail darter, but I believe there was going to be a dam constructed, and then this little critter that's like an inch long, the concern was they would go extinct because they would have to divert the flow of some water. And the environmentalists went nuts, and they said, we need an environmental impact study. And you know, you could see both sides of the argument. I'm actually not in agreement with the Supreme Court about the water decision they came up with, that only under certain conditions can we take the impact on water into account. And I disagree with them, but that's fine. You know, we can disagree. We're Americans. That's what the First Amendment looks like. But if you're that concerned about the environment, then why doesn't the Republicans call them? Here's what I would do. But then I don't take money from campaign contributors, so maybe that's why I see things differently. You know, it's so hard to listen to people when there's money shoved in your ears, seriously. But why don't you simply make a statement like, you want to do this? Let's have an environmental impact study of what the entry of potentially 100 million aliens would do to the environment of the United States. They need water, they need food, they need electricity, they need infrastructure, transportation, hospitals. Let's do an environmental impact study. In fact, why don't we also do an economic impact study? How much money will this cost? Because when you displace American workers, they wind up needing those safety net programs. You wind up destroying the wage structure for the middle class. Housing becomes more expensive because there's more people needing a place to live. Wages are being suppressed. Jobs are being lost from Americans to be given to foreign workers. Oh, by the way, that's what we keep hearing, is the same nonsense. Think about this one. we need to modernize the immigration laws. Yes, what they want to modernize is the laws right now state that aliens should not be hired when Americans are ready, willing, and able to do the job. They want to get rid of that. They want to have employers able to walk into a factory and fire Americans and bring in an entire army of foreign workers. The immigration lawyers on both sides of the aisle are salivating because these are their clients. And the banks are happy because the cost of mortgages will go through the roof. Bigger mortgages mean wider margins for profit for the banks. And what are Americans supposed to do? Live under a shade tree? Think about what is happening to America and why it's happening. Think about it. So for all the talk about the environment and climate change, why don't we require an environmental impact study be done if we're going to flood America with millions of people? Think of the impact on water, sewerage, food, housing, clothing, shelter, education, transportation, and healthcare. Let's look at all that. You had Mayorkas actually making a speech at the, when they were about to end Title 42, speaking glowingly, fabulously, about the remittances, the money being wired out of the United States by foreign workers. The Obama administration pumped billions of dollars into the economy under the aegis of an economic stimulus package. If we could put money into the economy, people will spend the money, and the people that they spend the money on will get money too, and the money circulates, and economists call that the multiplier effect. Every dollar you put in the economy generates three more dollars. Okay. Money wired out of the United States does not contribute to the multiplier effect. You may as well be burning the money. And the head of Homeland Security says, how wonderful all this money, billions and billions and billions of dollars are going to leave the United States to take care of families in foreign countries. I wrote an article a while back for Front Page Magazine, and the title of my article was that for the Democrats to succeed, Americans must fail. All that money leaving the country helps America to fail, increases the deficit at a time that we're overwhelmed, right? Meaning that more foreign workers will come to America requiring subsidies and sustenance in the United States. Again, increasing the costs. No one's talking about any of this. And the Democrats are on the same page with the Republicans because they're getting money from the same people. Bernie Sanders was on with Bill Maher. Bill Maher said, you know, the Democrats used to be seen as the party of the working American. Not anymore so much. Maybe the Republicans are considered more that way. Why? And Bernie Sanders said two things that I agreed with. Number one, Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision that unlimited amounts of money can be pumped into political campaigns meant that we probably need a new position of the government these days, the official auctioneer. I've made that point how many times in the past. But it's also because now the Democrats are taking money from the same people that are paying the Republicans. So they're getting bribed by the same people with the same goals, globalists. Globalists. They're indistinguishable. The reason the wheels came off the wagon, it used to be a clear delineation. The Republicans looked out for business owners, which is fine. They have legitimate concerns, too. Don't misunderstand. And the Democrats looked out for the working class. And they have concerns, too. So there was balance. It was balance. It was a scale that sort of balanced. When the Democrats told the American worker to go to hell, there's nobody supporting the average American worker anymore. They're done. They're going the way of the dodo bird. Neither party gives a rat's tail about the average American family struggling to survive. And again, all we're hearing is we're going to secure the southern border. We're going to secure your bedroom window. Don't worry about the other ways that people can break into your house. Don't worry about the other ways aliens gain entry into the United States. And the reason that you can't do border security without interior enforcement is because then you're going after the immigration fraud. Like this terrorist. By the way, immigration nowhere to be found in the press release. It was all about the FBI. They did mention the Joint Terrorism Task Force. There are immigration agents there, but you would think DHS would be a lead agency in the arrest and prosecution of a guy that committed immigration fraud, but it's not. Probably because Mayorkas is probably pissed about it. What do you mean you're going after a guy for lying on his immigration application? He's all in. When he was the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services, he ordered his adjudicators to get to yes, even when it was illegal, even when he was warned that the people looking for visas might have connections to terrorism. He said, I don't give a damn who they are. Approve, 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 approve. And that's the way they want to have an amnesty. Approve. So anybody who says anything is in. And if you say, well, if they've been living here for the last 8 years, how do you know? Aliens who run the border don't create a record of entry, and there's no way to do an investigation. You're going to have to presume as an adjudicator that everything on the application is 100% truthful unless you can prove otherwise. How do you prove otherwise if you can't do an investigation? So every application will be approved. And the more that people get away with fraud, the more that more people will come emboldened with the knowledge that they will succeed. I remember getting a ride into Manhattan one day. I was doing an appearance, I think, on Fox News or MSNBC, God knows. I was on all those networks before Citizens United was decided. And the guy was from Lebanon. And I asked him how he came here. I didn't tell him that I had been an immigration agent. And he told me how stupid and idiotic President Reagan was. He said, because to qualify for amnesty, all you had to do was say you worked on a farm. I said, and? He said, so my entire village came to America. They all claimed they worked on farms. I said, were they farmers? He said, we've never been on a farm, but it didn't matter. He said, so my entire village is here. And he said, once a month we have a barbecue during the summer, and we toast to Ronald Reagan the idiot. Now, I was no Reagan fan, but it was upsetting to me that this guy driving that car was in our country insulting a former president and calling Americans stupid, but we are. And we're vulnerable. And again, when you keep hearing we're going to secure the southern border, the question that no one's asking is why only the southern border? Is fentanyl that comes in across the Canadian border less lethal? Is fentanyl that comes in on a boat or on an airplane at an international airport less lethal than fentanyl that comes across the southern border? Of course not. Of course not. Then why are we only hearing about the southern border? They did it before when they pushed comprehensive immigration reform back in 2005, 2006. Back then, I wrote an op-ed. Jeff Sessions quoted me. I was upset with Trump for his fight with Sessions. Sessions is a really good guy. And what I said was they should rename comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. More recently, I said they should rename it the Overwhelm America Act. And we're hearing this from both sides of the aisle. The solution to border security is we will have a compromise. We'll secure the southern border. We'll secure your bedroom window. And then you're going to legalize everybody here. As I said, that's like saying that death cures cancer. We would have ever more people here, all here under the color of law, able to then bring as many family members, children here, and unless we change the law, they will ultimately be able to bring in all their brothers and sisters and their spouses and their children. We could double or triple our population, and we can't take care of Americans today. No one seems to care. Why does compassion never apply to the average American? That's what I want to know. Why are we looking to bring in foreign workers when you have so many Americans who, if properly educated, could take those jobs and bootstrap themselves out of poverty, especially in the minority communities? What are we doing? Is the system that's failing because it's designed to fail? There are a lot of people making a ton of money, but there's also lots of Americans losing not only their livelihoods, but losing their lives. So as we think about those soldiers who gave up their lives, think about how many Americans today are losing their lives because our government doesn't give a rat's tail. That's the only conclusion that I could come to. They could not care less if they tried. Americans are dead. Oh, well. This is certainly not a government of the people, by the people, or for the people. I urge you that as you attend those barbecues this weekend, as you get together with friends, neighbors, and family, have the conversations, provide them with the links to my articles at Front Page Magazine, perhaps provide them with a link to the podcast of my program today. We need to sit down as Americans, focused on what we as Americans share. Focus on what makes us most similar, not what makes us different, because I assure you that there's much more that we have in common than not. Have a great weekend. Be well. We'll see you next week right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good Memorial Day weekend.